Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Today, I would like to talk about flowers.
Flowers.
Flowers. Ah, yes, flowers. Have you received flowers as a gent?
I have. Not from, I don't think ever from romantic endeavours.
Right.
Only from performing.
I bought you flowers bless, of course.
For performing.
Yes.
However, I don't believe if I've ever received flowers in a romantic gesture.
Look, that hurts my heart a little bit. And like you would expect.
Mm.
Like Tom's like, yes, yeah. Yes, tell me about
tell
it.
Tell me about it.
So I spoke to a mate today who's just started dating a lovely new lass. And
right.
In her, I don't know how old she is. I didn't ask because it's not polite. Mm. But I'm assuming based on his age, late 20s, early 30s, he bought her flowers.
Ah.
And she's like, oh my goodness, no one has ever bought me flowers before.
Interesting.
Like, as a guy, I can sort of understand if at some point you've never been bought romantic flowers because it's fairly gendered. I don't love that it's gendered.
No,
I've bought men flowers before.
I would agree. It's generally women receiving flowers from men.
But
however,
if you get to the late 20s, early 30s, and no one's ever bought you flowers, that seems like a major oversight for a lady. I was shocked. He was shocked that no one had ever bought her flowers as well.
Wow. So what is it assuming that, she's had flowers bought for her before? So
well, I think that people think that it's cliche, right? And I think it's only cliche if you buy them on Valentine's Day.
Yep.
Any other day, like I've had wonderful times where, a girlfriend's bought me flowers to congratulate me on something, or romantic partners have bought me flowers just for romance.
Mm.
I've even had flowers turn up completely anonymously that to this day I still don't know who they were from.
Gee
it was
whiz.
Just a beautiful note that said that it was nice to be reminded that friends care about you sometimes. And it just,
aww.
I think people need to send either flowers or small potted plants if you don't want something that's going to perish.
I agree.
But I think we should normalise the genderless flower giving.
Yes, yes, please. I am proof and evident of that. I like flowers as for no excuse, no reason.
Yeah,
spontaneous flowers
are the best. Just that
yes.
I was thinking of you. Here's some pretty things that may die soon.
Yes, but you'll get a week out of them.
But it's just a lovely gesture. Anyway, I'm Liz Best.
I'm Tom Harris.
And this is Ghosts of Boyfriends Past. I just shocked me the other day when I was talking to my friend about people who get to their 30s and have never had flowers bought for them. So everyone go out, give some local florists some business and buy friends, lovers, anyone flowers just because.
That's right.
I
do
think.
It. I agree. It's a very worthy campaign to be on board with, Elizabeth.
So this is one of our main episodes, which means we have a guest, and it's a returning guest.
Yes,
this
indeed.
Week, but he is not in Brisbane anymore, so we don't actually have him with us. We've got him zooming in from Mount Isa. It's Tully.
Woo! Hello.
Hello. Tully. Welcome back, Tully.
It's a pleasure to be back here, not in the studio.
Well, look, we wish you were in the studio with us, but it's lovely to have you back in any way that you can come back to us. Now, we'll put the link to Tully's original episode in the show notes if you haven't binged back, but it was pretty early on in the Ghosts
That's right.
And
long-term readers of our little show will remember that Tully did an interesting thing. In his first appearance on the show, he came forward as kind of the bad guy, right?
Yeah,
he put his hand up and said, "I fucked him in my past." It's an interesting political maneuver to sort of front the press and beat the story, get ahead of the story, and then now everyone's like, oh, "Okay, he did the good thing," and then you come back on your second attempt, and everyone wants to vote you in.
Yes, where
it's
exactly.
It's a smart move, Tully.
And I also think that you gave me perhaps the best podcast title of any episode of any podcast I've been on.
Would you like to remind our listeners of what that was?
Yeah, I got the lovely pleasure of having my episode called Tully and the Magic Penis.
Yes. Yeah, well, yes. Welcome.
Yes, you're welcome. You're so welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you've got a story to tell us today.
I do.
And where are we situating this story? When are we situating this story?
So I'm going to jump back and forth a little bit because bits and pieces of this do appear over various parts of my life. It starts as early as the end of high school, and the most recent occurrence is probably about a year ago.
Ah, so a saga that's dipped in and out of your life for the past X amount of years, 10 plus years maybe, I don't know.
Yes.
Wow, okay. Before we jump into it, we do have rules on this here podcast, and I know Tully's heard them before, but readers upon reader upon reader are flocking to the show, I assume, in ever-expanding numbers, and they need to know the rules, Elizabeth. We have three generally on this podcast. The first is no doxing. Don't be a dickhead. If you figure out who Tully's talking about in this story or orbiting satellites in it, don't get on the socials and ruin it for the rest of us, please.
Yes.
Privacy is a key issue for
a lot of
people.
Best to to hide those things. And that's our other rule, is please use fake names for anybody who could be identified.
Yes.
And if you need to fudge some occupations and whatever to completely mask it, feel free to do so as well.
And no threats on microphone is our third little rule.
It's my least favourite rule.
Yes, but the lawyers do have a word with us. So So there we go, a little bit of preamble. We can hand it over to you now, Tully, I suppose, if you want to take
Excellent.
Us away and get us started.
And I might actually just open up with a little bit of a... what maybe disclaimer is the best word for it, because the person I'm talking about has actually heard my first episode.
Oh,
yes. So the first thing I need to say is sorry, I've not given you the name that you requested if you ever appeared on this show, because I happen to have a colleague by that name.
Oh, yeah, that would be awkward if you... yeah.
So I've given you a different name. I hope you approve, because you very much didn't like the name I gave the last ex.
Hey, we've had someone come on and say that their name was Gladys, which I think was probably, I mean, no shade on New South Wales in Australia, but so far that's my candidate for worst fake name.
That's very fair.
Yeah.
That's very fair.
Yeah.
Well, the name I'm using today is Eleanor.
Oh, that's fine. I like that name.
Yeah. The second thing I need to say is, if you are listening, Eleanor, perhaps don't listen to this one while you're at work or while you don't have time to process this. At the time that this was happening and at the time that we've talked about this since, you were not in the space to hear what I had to say in its entirety. So while, you know, if you would like to listen, please do. I'm sure there's some lessons learned. And if you want to come on later and sledge me in a following episode, please
That's
do.
What I was going to say. I was going to say, if you hear a few things and you're not happy about it, feel free to come. You've got
a right
of reply on this podcast.
So
absolutely.
99% of our readers are rubbing their hands in glee and delight at this. And then poor Eleanor.
Poor Eleanor is
Eddie's
starting to write a reply already.
There we go. Very good.
All right. Good disclaimers. Let's go on to the story.
Excellent. So this relationship started when I was 17. It started when I was in high school, and we met online.
Mm-hmm.
We were a fair way away. We lived about 3 hours drive from each other. So it started as a long distance relationship. And very quickly, it got to the stage of us talking every night, way later than we should be.
Ooh, for 17, how scandalous.
I know. I needed to be in bed or finishing assignments, and I was too busy talking to this to this new girl of mine. So eventually we met up. Her parents drove her all the way up to my where I was living, and we met and we went for a walk, and we took far too long on the walk because we stopped for stopped to enjoy the scenery.
Indeed. Yep.
And then the next time I went down to see her, and this sort of continued on throughout my senior year of high school, and it was sickening. It was a sickeningly cute relationship from the outside.
Yeah, I'm already feeling a little bit of coming on. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were young and naive, and we hear a lot of talk of love bombing on this show. We were both guilty of that.
Yeah.
First serious long-term relationships. And
you just think that you can fly when you're in those relationships, don't you? You just, like, everything is just so heightened, because not only are you, like, in love, but you're teenagers, and everything's heightened and more dramatic when you're a teenager,
and,
isn't it?
Exactly. And everything's enormous when you're a teenager.
And oh, when you're I don't know about that.
And you're experiencing everything for the first time. So it's, Jesus, this is love. This is great.
And you've still got the optimism, that wide-eyed optimism of this is it. I've found it already. It's 17.
I found it. True love. This is the one.
Yep.
And so this is where some of the, I guess, love bombing or some of the toxic habits started to jump in right from the get-go. So this is where, because we were long distance, we couldn't be together a lot. We would do cute little things like draw on ourselves with Sharpie, you know, a little love heart with each other's initials on it. Or we would, you know, do sickeningly sweet things. Like, there was an anecdote that I remember she talked about that caught on. And so every time we saw each other, I would propose to her and she'd say no, which was sickeningly cute and, in hindsight, very dumb.
Look, honestly, I would put that in. I would watch that movie. Like, that's adorable and gross, and I love
this
it.
This is a Hallmark rom-com idea.
Yes, absolutely. Lifetime movie of the week.
And so one of the things that I noticed right up the top was a lot of my lighter-coloured clothes were starting to get ruined by red and black Sharpie that I had drawn these little love hearts on myself with. And it got to the point where I had to stop doing it because it was just ruining my clothes. Unfortunately, the practicalities of it didn't seem to come through. And I remember feeling very guilty when I told her that I wasn't doing this anymore, because she took this as a sign that I was pulling away.
You bastard.
I know.
How dare you want pristine clothes?
So,
oh no.
And you know, young love, everything's huge. Every little bump is a mountain. Every little hurdle is, you know, a tall building you've got to leap. And we got through this. But one of the things that she gave me the next time we got together was a set of dog tags with a line from a John Green novel, and our details on each one. So I had this little necklace of dog tags.
Cute.
Which is very cute, except that I have no object permanence. Absolutely none whatsoever.
Right.
And so very frequently would forget to wear these because it wouldn't occur to me while I was getting ready to go and, you know, put these on. And while I could draw a little love heart on myself out in public, I couldn't suddenly find my dog tags.
Yes.
And I remember hiding that I didn't have them if I didn't have them while we were talking, or feeling guilty for not having them on. And this is starting to get to a lot of the tone of what happened throughout our relationship, was very much this idea of feeling guilty for things that I have done or not done, and feeling like I needed to be perfect, feeling like I had to have everything absolutely set out as they went.
Right. So, Tali, would you catch yourself with these dog tags example? Would you realize that you hadn't put them on when you're with her, and then you start flailing yourself for not caring for putting them on? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So this was starting to show up that, you know, I was feeling a little bit, I guess, pressured isn't necessarily the right word, but obligated to do these things.
Mm. Yeah. When you're younger as well, like, it sounds like she's doing a lot of reading between lines that aren't actually there, you know, and those things, those little gestures, like, I remember, you know, having relationships with person where, like, I would text them, and if they didn't text me back that night, I was like, well, obviously they're either out with someone else or they don't care anymore, because you don't have a relationship history of realizing that other people have lives and are forgetful and have flaws. So you're living up to this standard of perfection that doesn't exist in regular humans.
Absolutely. And especially for people who are very well versed in sort of the rom-coms, the John Green books, the young adult idea of this perfect love with all sorts of fun and quirky metaphors that are unique to you, because we're all a lot more unique than...
Yes.
Perhaps we are. So this has started to happen, but things are going well. We're very much young and in love and really enjoying each other's company. And at this point, we've both graduated high school. So I'm moving down to Brisbane to start my university degree. And she's starting her university degree and decides to go to a university that is both where she was living and in Brisbane. So
you're going to be in the same orbit.
We're going to be in the same orbit, which is incredible.
Like, absolutely after all amazing. That long distance, you're like, wow, like, suddenly we're in the same place at the same... This is our time, right?
Stars are aligning. It's
the
all
stars
good.
Are aligning, and this is meant to be.
Mm-hmm. It
is,
of course, fated. Fate. Yep.
Yep. Absolutely. So I moved down to Brisbane. This is my first time living out of home. It's her first time living out of home. And we're both starting to study for the first time, starting to work to support ourselves for the first time. And it is a lot. Mm. It's a whole lot. And it very quickly becomes apparent that we are becoming codependent to everyone but us.
When you first started being so close to each other, did you keep up doing all those little romantic gestures, or did you feel pressure to be that romantic on a daily basis?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How did that make you feel?
It felt a little bit claustrophobic.
Yeah.
But this was something that I felt like at the time that I couldn't voice. I couldn't say that, because that would be in some way hurting her feelings.
And yeah, so, of course. Yeah.
Typically in these young relationships, you haven't learned to communicate properly. Mm. And so you don't set up those needs and those boundaries that you've had.
And couple that with both of you moving to a new town, both of you starting brand new, like, university is a brand new thing. You're getting new jobs. So it's just piling on this extra stress and worry. Yes.
There's all these pressures, all these life changes. Mm. And so we very much latched onto each other, very much became this codependent relationship that everyone recognized except us. We were sickeningly cute in that, you know, I would go to uni and she would come to meet me on campus and she'd sit on my lap and we'd make out in the middle of the common room.
Gross.
And make everyone really uncomfortable.
Gross. No, and you were the people I hated. I hated.
And I started to realize that it was making my friends uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I tried to voice this, and the moment I started to voice it, she started to feel as if I was hiding her and I had to backpedal.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And so this became the start of me trying to almost separate my lives.
Oh, that compartmentalization is not healthy.
Terrible.
Yes.
It's really not a healthy habit to get into. But I didn't feel like I could communicate these sort of concerns that I had.
Yeah.
And so I was living with a housemate, and the housemate started to get a bit sick of it. We went to uni together as well. And he had actually set up a rule in response to us that said that she could stay over no more than two times a week.
Right.
No more than two nights a week.
Right.
Which, in hindsight, is very reasonable.
Oh, yeah. Like, but when you're living with a flatmate, having a relationship is actually quite difficult in terms of figuring out whose house you go to when, and you don't want to piss off the other person who's paying rent, especially when the person you're dating is not paying rent and using all your water and electricity and
exactly
ruining your sleep, you know.
You know, all of that. And he actually had a girlfriend at the time as well who, you know, he'd actually put these boundaries on himself as well.
Fair.
And we thought that was, you know, just because he didn't like her and,
right.
Oh,
you know.
No. Yeah.
But in hindsight, I'm very sorry to my first housemate. you put up with a lot of things. Sincerest apologies. And they're, I believe, still together, that couple.
Oh, nice. Healthy boundaries.
Yeah. So we'd set that up and he'd set up those rules and we had to follow them.
Yes.
Around about this time, she actually got herself a flat up in Brisbane, a street away from me.
Oh, okay. Handy, yep. ?
Now, I'm not sure how much of a hand she had in this particular decision because her parents were helping her find it, helping her pay for it, that sort of stuff. So I'm not entirely certain how much of this was her choosing this and how much of it was pure chance.
Right.
But I can't imagine it was 100% chance.
No, the statistical odds of finding somewhere not only in your suburb but a street away from you are pretty slim.
Yeah, the detective in me is raising an eyebrow and I would be hauling you both in for further questioning. This isn't a coincidence.
Yeah.
Yes. And so because of these rules that had been put on us, I started spending just about every night at her place, which was this tiny little, I would call it maybe a dormitory room. Oh. It had space for a bed and a desk. And then the kitchen was shared. The bathrooms were shared.
That's like living on res at uni. No, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like living on res.
Yeah.
And it was incredibly cramped. It was incredibly claustrophobic. But I did this because, you know, we didn't want to be apart from each other. We couldn't be apart from each other.
You were enmeshed.
Mm-hmm. Thoroughly codependent.
Mm-hmm. And so at this time, when you're kind of spending most of your time just you and her alone, are you still happy to be participating in these, I guess, overt romantic cliche gestures, or has it settled down to a bit more normal life yet? Or
this is where the cracks begin to show in this relationship.
Right.
Because, or at least from my perspective, they started to show was I was realizing that I needed something a little calmer and I needed a little more space to myself, but I couldn't articulate that.
And when you're in like physical close quarters, as well as like you feel like you need more mental space when you spend time in close physical quarters as well. Yeah. Oh,
It became a point where I would, and this is actually, I'm going to jump forward a little bit. I started ignoring calls. I started putting my phone on silent and leaving it be, or pretending that it had run out of battery because I needed that space away from her. But
yeah.
Of course, that's quite toxic behavior that came from me not feeling like I could articulate that I needed that.
Yeah.
And from her perspective, you go from answering calls all the time and replying to messages and all that to suddenly just,
oh, God, oh, he's not picking up the, as a first-year uni student, I would have freaked the fuck out. I absolutely would have been convinced you were seeing somebody else.
Yeah, and it became this sort of, because I was ignoring calls and because I was turning my phone off or, you know, running out of battery and stuff like that, she was trying to latch on even harder. And because she was trying to latch on even harder, I was trying to give myself even more space. And this kind of set up what the rest of the relationship would feel like. There were points where, and this may be a little bit too much information for some people, it won't revolve much around sex throughout a lot of this, but there were points where we would be having sex. I felt like I couldn't say no. And so I would be falling asleep, and did fall asleep a number of times because I was so exhausted, but I couldn't articulate that. Ugh. I didn't want this at that point.
That's rough, man.
Yeah, it was quite difficult, and it felt like I was the bad guy.
Yeah.
And were you dealing with feelings of, I'm a man, therefore I have to want this, I have to want this sex, right?
Like, absolutely.
I'm a man, and I have this is what I want in life, right? So you're bullying yourself on that angle as well, I would guess.
Yeah. And I guess the communication that comes with this, actually, I wasn't going to talk about our first time together, but I actually think it does show a little bit about our relationship.
Sure.
Happened initially when we got together. She was set that she was going to wait until marriage. And okay. I was happy to see that through. My way of rationalizing that was that if I wasn't willing to wait for that, then I was in it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Which I've now sort of dealt with how that was rationalized, but I was happy to wait.
Yeah.
And then on her 18th birthday, because I'm something like 3 weeks older than her.
Uh-huh.
On her 18th birthday, we went out, had a good night, had some drinks, and went back to my place. And then the things started to get hot and heavy. And as we were, what's a good way of not grossing out all of the listeners as I
gross out, like,
gross
honestly,
out? As we were splashing around in the shallow end.
Mm-hmm. that's a decent way not to gross people out. The producer Zane is going, is it? Yes, well, continue splashing around in the shallow end.
Yeah, as we're splashing around in the shallow end, things start to get deeper, and I ask, are you sure? And she said yes. Now, she had not communicated to me at any point that she had changed her mind on any of this.
Right.
But our entire first time together was pretty much characterized by me wondering when, you know, when this became too much and when it was, you know, we're having sex as opposed to just foreplay.
Yeah.
Mm.
To the point where we finished up and we had sex for the first time, and I still wasn't entirely certain that that was what was intended.
Oh, that's such a tough one because you had consent, obviously, while it was happening, and obviously, you know, enthusiastic consent. Otherwise, you would have been like, okay, enough. But having had the conversation earlier that contradicted that, it's such a difficult line.
Yeah, I understand that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, oh, God, this whole episode is just like, how important is communication?
Yes, isn't
like
it?
Like, the theme of the episode is, oh, my God, it's so important.
And so that's jumping back a little bit and then
jumping forward into the, you know, falling asleep.
Yeah. And so...
And, of course, she would be reading into this that it means something like, you do need the space, but she would potentially be reading into this completely differently, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this really came to a head at a point probably about a year into us dating.
Mm-hmm.
This is most of the way through our first year of uni. And I'm doing a performance degree. I'm doing a music degree. So I have to be up early for rehearsals. I've got to be there on time. And by on time, I mean early.
Mm. Mm.
And there came a point where, you know, I would get up and I would start to get ready, and then she would, in what I'm sure she thought was a playful manner, she'd sort of throw me back onto the bed and sit on my lap and, you know, refuse to let me go to rehearsal. But
which is cute when you don't actually have an important thing you need to be at.
But this became very much to me feeling like I was trapped.
It's
and
a
to
test.
The point where, you know, she would tickle me, and I'm quite ticklish. She would tickle me to keep me down, and it felt very much like I was being physically restrained.
Yeah, it's just a joke. This is just, we're having fun now. If you can't feel like you're able to express yourself, that would be incredibly restrictive.
Yeah, and so she started to see that I was getting really irate at this, which, you know, for this being just a playful thing, seems like I'm getting really short with her. And so she starts trying to organize things. Like, I'd never been really drunk before. I sort of didn't drink that much.
Yeah.
And so she wanted to see how I was drunk. And so we organized a night and got some bottles of cheap white wine, and she got me to drink through them. But I started to feel a little ill and didn't want to keep going. And she pressured me to continue to the point where I could not drink Sauvignon Blanc for, I think, about 2.5 years.
Oh, gosh.
It was just so... I felt so out of control.
Yeah.
To the point where I met up with my parents, and they first started to really see that I was feeling the pressure on this one, in that I threw my phone down on the table and just put my head in my hands, because I had sort of 20 messages and 3 missed calls between the time I left home and had got to them. Mm. She tried to cook lunch for me, except she hadn't told me that she was planning that. And so I went and got lunch with some friends from uni before I went home, and then got the third degree because I hadn't told her that I was going to grab lunch with my friends. And this all came to a head. I felt like I was not... I felt like this relationship couldn't last.
Yeah.
And so I tried to break up with her. And she... very, very reasonably said that she hadn't heard any of these sort of issues before, and so asked for another chance, like for a little bit of time for us to work through it.
Yeah, so which I think is, from her perspective, I think that's fair, because because as much as what she is doing is very clingy and codependent, if you consider the lack of communication that's been had on both sides, it seems like quite a reasonable kind of, oh, now that I'm aware of these things, let's give it a go, question mark.
Yeah, exactly. And I very reasonably, I think, said yes, of course. You know, now that I've told you about these things, we can work through them. And for about a month or so, we tried to do this, and I really wasn't feeling like much was changing.
Yeah.
I really wasn't feeling like a lot of this had changed. And I'm not sure how much of that was I hadn't communicated these things properly, or if she... was just in the same habits.
I would hazard a guess that it could be, you know, like when you are put in a panic response, it's the fight or flight, right? And so once she's now heard that there is trouble, she's now treading even more water to try and keep it. And then those patterns of panic and the way that she reacts to panic would be kicking back in, which is
exactly
keep him. Because it goes against every fiber of your being when somebody tells you that your relationship is in trouble, like to leave. Like I've been guilty of this, I'm going to say. I've had an ex-partner, when we got to a really rocky part, the rocky part was his fault. The part that was my fault was when he said, I need space, and I kept calling and texting and calling. And he's like, for fuck's sake, I'm out at a gala right now and you have not given me the space I have asked for. It's really hard. Your brain goes crazy. I'm telling you, like, I felt unhinged because I thought I was losing them.
Absolutely. And so it became this very typical, she would pull me closer and hold on as tightly as she could, and I would pull away even more.
Yeah.
And so about a month goes by, and I try to break up with her again because it's just not working. It's not
because you're just
doing the things.
Yeah, you're still being chased rather than just giving you space.
And she felt like I hadn't given her the time to sort of to prove that things could be better.
Right.
And at this point, I had done something thoroughly unreasonable before this, because I was scared. I had moved the things from her place into a suitcase because I thought I would have to pack it up. And she took that as me being irrational and being sort of taking her as villainizing her as if she was going to do something unreasonable when we broke up. And so I remember staying out in the streets of inner city Brisbane until I think it would have been about 3:30 or 4 in the morning.
This
had happened about like 9 o'clock in the evening, and we were talking or arguing or going over this for so many hours until I was starting to actually get delirious because I was so tired. And so I agreed to her request to give her more time.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I think what would have been reasonable for me was to just say, I don't feel like I had a choice in that matter. I'm out.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to communicate that.
No, and this whole relationship is based on a lack of knowledge in how to communicate.
Absolutely.
So, you know, falling back into that pattern of just feeling helpless and non-communicative would have just exacerbated everything.
Yeah. And so I gave him more time, and then it happened again. And again, we were up until 2 or 3 in the morning talking about this, and I felt like I had no choice but to say no. And I think in hindsight, I had no choice but to say, okay, you can have more time. Because I was essentially just being outlasted.
Yeah.
I didn't have the stamina to keep saying why I felt that this was not working.
It's a siege mentality.
You're
locked up in that castle, and your supplies are dwindling. Food routes supplies are cut, and she's outside. She's got all the ammo. She's hurling things at your defenses. Yep, and you get broken down. Yep.
The tragedy of this for me is that you're both just doing what your love languages and instinct telling you to do in a panic response, and that nobody's really the bad guy here. It's just a horrible miscommunicated situation.
It truly was. And then we got to, she'd asked until Valentine's Day. She wanted us
That's so rom-com. Oh, never have Valentine's Day as a deadline for anything in a relationship.
Not just the relationship deadline. Already quite a...
But you're setting yourself up for the worst Valentine's Day of all time.
To pin it on Valentine's Day as well, that's a twofer.
It's not going to make it more rom-commy if you suddenly change everything because it's Valentine's Day. Oh, no.
Yeah. And so we continued on for another sort of, I think it's 3 weeks, a month. And we get to Valentine's Day, and we'd said we'd do something low key because, you know, we were sort of just trying to make sure that things were. She bought me so many gifts.
Yep.
She bought me so many things.
Who saw this coming, ladies and gentlemen? Hands up. All of you
everyone's
at home.
Hands up. Good. Yep. Oh,
and
dear.
So
I get her though. I so get her. I feel really upset by this.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not against her. I'm like, yeah, fair enough.
This is what young Liz would and did do.
Oh boy.
And so we get to February 15th in the morning, and she's stayed over at mine, and I have a gig in the mid afternoon, and I can feel it in the pit of my stomach. I know this isn't working.
Yeah.
And I am regretting every part of me that said, let's wait until Valentine's Day. I am regretting this whole thing. And I'm faced with this, my girlfriend of a year and a half, who we've moved out of home at the same time. We were first adult partners together. And I've woken up and she is lying there in my bed, naked, surrounded by the gifts that she's given me, and knowing that I've got to end this. We get up, and I don't want to, you know, do this as she's naked in my bed first thing up. And, you know, I went and I got her some breakfast, and, you know, we talked for a bit, and I was starting to get dressed and, you know, move around as if starting a regular day, and she's not moving. She's still in bed. She's still naked. She's still there. And I asked if she was going to get dressed, and she said no. She was just going to wait until I got back from my gig.
If she doesn't move, it can't be over.
And so I have to say again, like, can you get dressed? And she's starting to realize what's happening, and we start getting into this argument that is all about, this argument about why I would do this while she was, you know, in my bed while she was naked. While
you're
just
trying
after Valentine's
to remedy
Day.
This.
And she is desperately asking for more time. And in fact, not just asking, but demanding. And I'm there, like looking at the clock, knowing how long things have taken in the past, and knowing that I couldn't just not show up to this gig.
Mm. Oh, my heart is so sore right now. Yeah, I've got both hands on the table, just feeling like,
this is so painful.
And so we start talking, and I'm feeling so guilty about every single part of this, which I now know was not my fault. Yeah, there was some poor judgment involved, but this was out of my control, every single element that I was feeling guilty about in this moment. And this argument continues. It keeps going. It keeps getting louder. And I'm not comfortable leaving her in my house alone. But at this point, I've got no choice. I've got to go. Yep. And so the last word out of my mouth as I am leaving for this gig is, I am in tears, and she's asked for more time, and I've just said fine and left the house.
And I'm going to take over. You're heading to the gig, and you're an absolute mental anguish, and are you kicking yourself at why did I say or are you
absolutely
yep so
absolutely.
you're already abusing yourself, well, kicking yourself for saying fine. Yep.
And I'm this whirlwind of emotion, and I'm talking to my friends who I hadn't told about the previous breakups, because, well, I told about the first one and then I said we asked for more time, but I hadn't told them about the next because some part of me knew that it wasn't going to stick.
Yeah.
And so I was ashamed to sort of keep saying to them, oh, you know, it's going to end, and then it didn't. And so I finally talked to my best mates about this, one of whom hasn't really heard from me in about 6 months.
There's that compartmentalization. Yep.
And I just realized I left out some stuff, but I'll get back to that if we've got the time. But I am this whirlwind, and I go to the gig. I've turned off my phone. I finish the gig, and I've got this message from...
My anxiety, sorry, it's so high right now, just imagining what's going to be on your phone. Okay, go.
I've got this message from Eleanor that says something to the effect of, and I don't have this phone anymore and I don't have the message, but I remember it was something to the effect of, how dare you bring your friends into this? How dare you bring your friends into this? That's it. It's done. Because my friends had called her up, specifically one of my best mates from high school that we still best mates now, had messaged her and said, how dare you keep doing this to him? How dare you keep forcing him to stay here?
I'm sorry, that's a great friend. Okay, like, that absolutely is a good friend. And I feel awful for Eleanor, but that is some good friendship right there.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here in this sort of very traditional brass band looking uniform with a trombone and doing everything I can not to just start weeping with relief as I'm talking to my friends, as I'm talking to my mum, who's just found out from my other best mate, who called her to check up on me to make sure I was okay.
This fucking great network of friends. Like,
oh, man.
You activate the phone tree, you call everybody.
Yeah. And so you would hope this would be where it ends.
Oh, dear.
You would hope this would be where it ends. And to be fair, it doesn't get any worse than that.
Okay.
But there are a couple of sort of appendices to this that add a little bit, that change a little bit of the context and the effect it had on my life, which is, to start with, she's still got the keys to my house.
Ah, yes.
Oh, dear.
And she's refused to give them back until she has got her stuff from my place, which is very reasonable.
Okay.
And sort of, I hadn't cleaned up. I hadn't really organized anything there. But in the end, while my housemates were out, she had come with a friend and her mum and packed up my room and any shared belongings we had and any of her stuff and left.
Right. So she took all the shared stuff.
Yeah, including like a quite an expensive comic collection that, you know, paid a little more than I had in this collection.
That's not great. No, you need to negotiate that again. You need to communicate, negotiate that shit.
And then sort of as I'm starting to finally deal with this and pack up and move on, I get more messages from her. And it's about 6 months on and she's asking for just one last date because she's never got that closure.
Right. No, you will never get closure from seeing the person who you broke up with for a date again. That is opening a door. That's not closing it.
That's right. And as I pry Liz down off the ceiling, Tully, continue.
And so because she's still got this incredible power over me, because I still feel this guilt for all of the things that have happened. I said yes, even though I was starting to see somebody else. And that actually really hurt her.
Oh, yeah, that would have burned me too. Yep. Absolutely.
And it was not until this prospective new partner had said, actually, I'm really uncomfortable with this, that I actually called it off.
Yes.
There we go.
Thank God.
There we go.
So now we're going to jump forward in time to 5 years later.
Okay. Which is how long ago now, roughly?
I'd say about a year ago now.
Okay, cool.
And I get a message out of the blue.
Uh-huh.
That says, hey, sorry for, you know, showing up out of the blue. This is just... you've popped up in my friend suggestions, and I had a quick look and I saw, you know, the comedy set that you did online, and it really brought some light to my day, and I saw what had happened, and she had some, you know, interesting stuff happen in her life, some really horrible stuff happen, and it looked like she was reaching out in need of something.
Okay.
And so we started talking and we talked about what was going on, and in the end she gave me a call and we talked through what had happened, and I found out some really important details that I had forgotten or missed or she'd never told me about. So one of the things that showed up just how codependent we are was she remembered a time where she had actually tried to break up with me.
Oh.
And in the stress of uni, in the stress of all the things that was going on, when she went to talk to me, I don't think she ever said that we were breaking up. She said, hey, we need to talk about some stuff. And I'd said, I'm not having the day for it now. It's not the time. I can't do it. Yeah. And practically locked myself in my room so that we didn't have to face this conversation.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That is an interesting point of view.
Yeah. And I had completely forgotten this.
Oh.
And then came the real kicker, was that for the last 6 months of our relationship, she was actually hiding some quite severe injuries from me, from her father.
Oh shit.
And so she hadn't sought medical attention because she knew that this would be a physical sign of it. She didn't want to tell me because she thought that I would report this.
Mm.
And so for the last 6 months of this relationship, while all of this stuff is going down, while everything is happening, she has had fractured shins.
Holy
and
fuck.
Has been living with the fact that this man has been still has custody of her little brother.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh my God. Wow. What a thing to get, what news to get out of the, like 5 years down the track,
I've got nothing.
You get this info. Yeah,
I just got winded by that. That's
me too. What a sucker punch.
Oh my God.
And that is actually what inspired me to talk about this here, because prior to this realization, what I had taken from this was a codependent, coercive control relationship to me.
Right.
And suddenly I've come to realize that this is a trauma response, that she's latching on to the partnerships she has outside of her family.
Absolutely. And, like I've been saying from the start in this story, obviously, I see no bad guys in this. It's just the tragedy of the two of you at the wrong time with the wrong set of communication skills. Like,
exactly.
God, I wish that we teach high school students empathy and effective communication. Like, there are the two things that I think that our young people need to know how to do in life is to have tough conversations, set boundaries, and communicate effectively. Like, the tragedy of this is that the communication could have solved every single one of the problems.
Just about everything.
I'm sure I'm not the only one screaming that this relationship demands a redo with decent communication skills.
Yeah.
Imagine how it could have
been. Like, if you had a sliding doors moment, doors moment, you may not be together still, but you would be, you could have gotten out of this.
You may well be friends.
Yeah, you could have gotten out of this a lot of strength from each other rather than continually, you know, adding to the stress of each other's lives unintentionally.
Yeah. Wow.
And the trauma that came from this relationship really affected my next relationship. And in fact, the one after that.
Well, absolutely. Your first relationship pattern set you up for everything. Mm, yep. Like, you know, you that's where you learn to communicate, that or not, as the case may be. And that's where you learn, you know, what your love languages are and how to display those. And if you're butting heads with the other person you're with, it's, you're setting yourself up for bad patterns to repeat themselves.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry that one relationship goes on to affect other relationships you've had, but what do you, from this whole saga, if there is more to add, please do, but what do you learn from this whole saga? I mean, we all seem to be...
So I've got this lovely little epilogue, which is to say that I have learned quite a lot from this.
Good.
I learned that, and unfortunately this was a lesson that I had to learn from the next relationship too, but I learned that once you have decided it's over, likely it's over.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
Once there's any part of you that's come to that conclusion or decision, it's very rare that you can come back from that. It's just prolonging. I agree.
And another part is that I am now in a lovely communicative relationship. And from what I can see and from what we've spoken about, so is she.
Oh.
Great.
And the fact that you guys have talked about that and you're aware of what communication looks like to each other is so fucking healthy.
And Eleanor, I wish you all the best in this relationship. I know the previous relationship from this was a true nightmare, and I'm glad you're out of that and into what I see as a really positive one. And I'm with a partner now who does have a lot of traumatic responses, who has a lot of trauma responses to things as a factor of a past relationship. But we have been able to talk about this and we recognize each other's trauma triggers. And it is so important to know where your partner is coming from.
Yes. Mm,
absolutely.
And to know that trauma and to understand when is the time to communicate and when is the time for sympathy and to hold back on those things. And so I guess what I've learned is, even if it feels like it's going to be a hard conversation, boundary setting and communicating those concerns is so important.
It's so important. And honestly, I don't think I have any lessons to add. I think that you know, I've peppered them throughout this episode, and I feel like Tully's just said all of the things that I was thinking. Like, as always, communicate. That's like, we need to teach people effective communication from a very young age, and that it's okay to speak up when your needs aren't being met.
That's right.
And then you can't feel guilty for other people's behavior as well. I think that's a big important one for me. I know I just said I wasn't going to do lessons, but I just remembered I wanted to say that one. You can only feel guilty for things that you've done. You can't feel guilty for things that other people are doing. You've got to make sure that you know that your behavior is the only thing that you can control. And if other people's reactions and behavior is making you feel guilt, then you need to communicate more and reassess.
That's right. I'll quickly tack on. It's not really a lesson, but it is interesting how Tully, when your relationship was finally over in this story, and you said you had feelings of relief versus feelings of sadness. Normally when you break up with someone, you're sad, you're distraught, oh my God. But your relationship ended and you felt relief.
That's how
and
you
that's,
know.
That's an interesting little difference in when a relationship ends.
I've had one where I felt relief. Yeah. Like I thought I'd be devastated God, and then it was over. I was just like, oh, I feel really light now. That's a problem.
Gee whiz. Well, everybody at home, relax, uncurl your fingers and your toes and just... okay.
Lower your shoulders, unclench your neck, unclench your jaw, like take
back your
a few
knuckles,
breaths.
Do all that.
Tully, what the?
Thank you for the roller coaster ride that was your teen love life.
Thank you for indulging that and for, again, having me on the show.
Look, I really appreciate that story because I think it's got some incredibly valuable lessons for everybody. And again, that's what this podcast is all about, is learning through trauma.
That's right.
So thank you for sharing yours. If you at home have a story that you would like to share with us, you can contact us at ghostofboyfriendspast@gmail.com or go to thatsnotcanon.com/ghostofboyfriendspast and fill in our little form. Or just have a chat to us on social media. If you've got a story you want to write in for a minisode because you can't quite, you know, bring yourself to put your voice to it. Eleanor, if you're out there, I would adore having you on the podcast to hear your side as well, because I think it's incredibly valuable to hear from both sides in a relationship that you know, like where you were coming from for your communication style and what Tully was giving on his side. I can't communicate anymore. I've lost all my words from that story, but we'd love to have you on. You've got an open invitation.
Rate, review, share our little show. I'm sure someone out in the universe who hasn't heard us yet will get something out of these stories.
Yes.
So we appreciate that. Otherwise, keep dating. We need, you know.
We need your stories, keep putting yourself on the line for the sake
Team
of storytelling.
That's right. Thank you,
Team
Tully.
Love sucks. How dare you? All right. Thanks, Tully. Until next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There are known knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns. But there are also unknown knowns. The Ancient and Esoteric Order of the Jackalope is a secret society devoted to unearthing and sharing this forgotten knowledge. Each episode, we take one of these strange stories and share it with you. No topic is off limits, except for the obvious. Available wherever fine podcasts are sold.